trust. Charge we're not sure about.
Episode 61? Yep, 61, the 11th of November. Rick, Gabriel, Mark, Lauren. Woohoo! We are together.
Is this everyone?
Huzzah!
This is everyone, yeah.
It is. First time in forever.
Come on, Mark, we need a hey now.
Hey now!
And Lauren, officially, we don't ever clap you anymore because you're just one of us, right? You're
not, I know, you're not it's so disappointing.
Yeah, I'm not calling you out. I'm not giving you special props anymore or nothing like that.
I understand.
Gabriel, you're at Walmart, aren't you?
I'm at Michael's now. Arts and crafts, baby.
Is that Are you getting some coloring crayons? Doing a presentation?
I'm getting some poster board and some letters for a lemonade stand.
Hey, all right.
Make sure you stop by the health department and get your license.
Is salad fire not working out, Gabe?
Every little bit of extra income helps.
That's where you should say no comment.
Actually, salt bar is doing really well, but yeah, my daughter is doing a lemonade stand for a cheerleader workshop with the San Diego Chargers, and it all goes to Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Nice.
So if you want to donate, hit me up on the Twitters.
Cool. All right.
Shameless plug.
Am I going to get any lemonade?
I will mail it to you.
Okay.
Mark, you should get yourself out there, and side by side, you should start flogging your beer as well.
That would actually be pretty good. A beer stand instead of a lemonade stand. I'm sure the local authorities will have nothing to say about that.
Yes, I'm sure. Well, it was all so much fun before we started recording.
Well, let's all not talk at once.
Come on, show leader. Put us on an agenda track here.
All right, then. So I have got a few things for this week. Let me run through some tech news first. We'll maybe tackle all of that first, and then when we're done with that, we'll move on to some business news. In the tech news, right, what have we got? Google Cloud Platform revs its container-related services. So it's released updates to its Docker registry and its container engine. HDS announces an all-flash version of its flagship 100% uptime VSP platform, right? The VSPF. So I guess if you want an all-flash Big Iron platform, they've got you covered. We'll probably have something to say about that. And I don't know if anybody cares to say about this. The iPad Pro, to me, it looks crap, and it's not for the enterprise. So, well, I don't know who it's for, actually, to be honest, unless you're an Apple fanboy, and I don't get it at all. Maybe we can talk about that as well. But I've got some questions, first of all, right, around Google Platform. So it's revved its container offerings, right? It runs its own version of a Docker registry and its own kind of, well, they call it Container Engine, and it will let you, it's kind of an orchestration and a clustering platform for Docker, right? Fair enough. Okay, so they're playing catch up a bit there. They've maybe got some semi-decent offerings now. What I want to know, though, is like, we all know, well, I guess Hans would have said that Amazon Web Services is for the ponytailed developers, yeah? And I think we probably all think that Microsoft Azure is quite well suited towards the traditional enterprises. Why would you choose, if you were in the market for a public cloud platform, what would make you choose Google Cloud Platform? Or what kind of customers, you know, what's like, I don't think niche is the right word, but what's their angle in the cloud? Because, yeah, we all get Amazon is probably first with most things, and they're the leading name there, and we get that Microsoft's kind of chiseling itself a niche in the traditional enterprises. What's the game for Google's cloud platform? What's the point of it?
Wow, that's a little harsh.
No, but honestly, I mean, they're one of the big three. We keep saying that, and we know squarely where Amazon fits and squarely where Azure fits, and I have no idea where Google Cloud Platform fits.
I don't know. Does it appeal to the scientific community? I mean, is it are people that do high performance computing, are they going to Google and getting stuff done there instead of building out their own HPC infrastructure? I don't know. It's an interesting question, right? I would think, though, that people that are doing analytics, right, large-scale analytics, would be interested in doing that on Google, maybe as opposed to doing it on either Amazon or Azure, because Google's got, you know, they have that stuff built in for their own business anyway. Maybe it's just easier to make it work on Google than it is on, I don't know. I'm just supposing.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea whether or not they have services that are geared even towards that. But I get where you're coming from, actually. It would maybe make sense because we all know that Amazon leverages its massive infrastructure that's already got out there for Amazon.com and all that kind of stuff, and it just carves you out slices of that. Yeah, Google's got all of that kind of analytics stuff. Maybe they could productize that. Maybe they do. I don't know. And you know what? I think it says a lot that I'll be careful what I say here. I know a moderate amount about Amazon Web Services. I can find my way around it quite well. I use it 3 or 4 days a week. I can find my way around Microsoft Azure as well. You know what? I don't even have an account on Google Cloud Platform. So I think that says a lot as well. You know?
That's okay. Google knows a lot about
it. It says more about
Google. Yeah. I know, yeah.
Google knows. You don't have to know that much about Google. They know everything about you.
Yep, you're damn right.
Well, it could just be that they're catering to a different class of user with that kind of offering, right? If nobody else, if there's a gap in the market, there obviously who's going to know more about what market forces look like in terms of desire and need based on search. So, yep. I mean, obviously they could take their vast swath of information that they have around their analytics and apply that to find new growth markets that they could foresee where they could have a competitive advantage versus everybody else. I mean, Google should have the most competitive advantage over everyone based on the fact that the global desire to determine or acquire information flows through them.
Totally. And I agree with that, Gabriel, but I don't think they are leveraging that at all. And I think things like...
No, they're not leveraging it in their cloud sales.
Right, right. Of course, yeah.
Well, I mean, but also here's another thing. It's like, have you ever met a Google salesperson?
No.
Oh,
right?
Oh, yes, I have.
So it's like, you know, but no, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, I've had several inquiries by AWS for sales roles. It's, you know, from the AWS side, and obviously Microsoft knows how to sell things. Does Google know how to sell things?
The answer is Google does not know how to sell things. I mean, look at Android even. They, you know, basically they sell it through other phone manufacturers. Yes, they do have some of their own. But that was kind of why they had this split, right? To, you know,
Alphabet.
Yeah, does Alphabet sell stuff? I think so.
Does it?
I thought Alphabet was just the holding company.
Yeah, I did.
I think that it's the umbrella company, but there are several, sub companies in there that are working on maybe selling something someday, but you know, but the ones that aren't really profitable yet, more of the science experiments.
Okay, I had that wrong then.
It also leads back to the core competency of an organization. Amazon has always been a retail organization, therefore selling cloud services has been in their wheelhouse. Microsoft has always been a retail and software technology and, you know, company, and therefore selling their software component as a consumable cloud offering makes a lot of sense. Google sells advertising.
Right.
And they make a book.
It's a completely different market, right?
And they really don't sell it. They really don't sell it. You subscribe to it.
And then they've got such a monopolistic, you know, stranglehold on... Bless you, young man. Such a monopolistic stranglehold on search and advertising that they really don't even have to work too hard to do that.
Remember that their other section of revenue, we looked it up one day, right? Their ad revenue was by far the lion's share of their revenue. But their other, which included the Google Cloud Platform, remember, that was larger than the annual revenue of VMware.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Right. Was it $9.6 billion or something?
Yeah, and that's other. It's more than just cloud.
And does anybody know how they do lunch? Because, like, if you work at Microsoft and you go to the Microsoft cafeteria, you buy your own lunch. If you work at Amazon, I'm pretty sure, you know, you buy lunch there. But if you work at Google, do they just give you lunch? They probably don't even know how to sell lunch to their employees.
Yeah, no, but that's very true, actually. I mean, I don't know if it's at all Google campuses, but definitely the main ones. I mean, I've read tons of articles talking about how they do free lunches and stuff like that. What a great point. They can't even sell lunch. I love it.
They can't even sell lunch to their own employees.
You know what, though? If it's – okay, so it – I don't know whether it makes money, but the revenue that Rick mentioned, you know, it was still a big number. Not a big number for Google, but a big number for anybody else, right? I think the likes of Rackspace would snap their hands off to have revenues like that in the cloud business. But if it doesn't turn out to be successful for Google, do they care?
No, they'll just shut it down like they do everything else that they don't like and move on to something else.
It'll go the way of Google Wave.
But that's a really good point, right?
No. I think Google needs to be in the analytics services business just like they do their own analytics. I think they really – my guess is that somewhere there somebody thinks that's a strategic business for them, analytics services.
Yeah, but it's one thing to think it's a strategic business for you. It's another thing to be able to productize it and sell it like we've just been talking about.
Yeah, but also think about their key target customers are probably going to be, financials, research universities. Those aren't your traditional
sale. Looking through their customers, they have a bunch of customers listed, and there's a lot of retail, there's a lot of tech. I'm not seeing much as far as like research and stuff, although there could be. I'm just quickly browsing.
Yeah, but the retail is probably doing analytics there.
Sure. But I mean, yeah, as far as the actual customer, what they are, what they do.
Look at somebody actually went and looked something up on the show.
Yeah, there you go.
God, I know why we brought you on now.
We're only as good as Wikipedia, guys.
What do you mean? We do this all the time. Come on. Right.
Can I clarify something, Gabriel? So you're shopping. You're not on your own either, are you?
Nope, I got my little man with me.
Man, you got your little man with you.
I'm driving too. I'm driving now, yeah.
Giving him a lot of attention, obviously. How can you podcast and do that?
Come on, skills. The kid's doing all the research for him.
Right? Yeah,
I know. I got him in the back. He's on the tablet. He's Googling it up.
There you go. I reckon we flogged that one to death. So on to something. Oh, here we go, right? So HDS and their all-flash version of the VSP. Okay, aren't like honking big iron arrays like this, aren't they like flatlining and not growth market anymore? What's the deal with this?
Well, they still want to sell them.
And I don't doubt that they're probably high margin, and I guess they've got a lot of existing customers on them that they can leverage. And, you know, they're not the kind of customers, I suppose, that walk away from a platform like that.
They haven't adjusted their product line the way the EMC has, where they've moved off of VMAX and onto Extreme.io. They don't have a subset product that works on that, and I still think they're more monolithic in their approach, and therefore this just makes sense to them.
But you have to do like a forklift upgrade, right, to get it to get the all flash or no?
Oh, I would have thought so. I think it's a new SKU and it's a new unit that you would ship in. Yeah.
People love forklift upgrades.
Oh, don't they just? Yeah.
But also keep in mind, right, the VSP came in, I think, around 2010, kind of before the dawn of non-rotational storage taking the lion's share of the market, or at least the cool stuff of the market. I think that this offering here by Hitachi is probably good, but I don't think it's like a whole new top-to-bottom engineering endeavor since the dawn of solid-state or non-rotational storage. But don't get me wrong, Hitachi is very capable of doing it. I just don't think this is it.
No, I think you're right, Rick. This is like 3PAR, HP 3PAR, putting flash in their systems too, right? It's like the architecture's not really built for flash, but you can get it and you get better performance, lower latencies just because you're using flash.
And I suppose you get that mature set of enterprise features that those customers are used to as well, because a lot of the startups, it takes a while, doesn't it, to implement things like, and I know that, I guess, generally speaking, replication and stuff like that's moving up the stack, but integration with SRM and all of that kind of enterprise stuff that you're used to getting from your traditional arrays, you still get that, but then you get in an all-flash packaging, I guess, yeah?
Right. I mean, you look at it, the monolithic vendors, you know, what they really have going for them is a large install base that they can go ahead and sell to based on previous relationships. They have mature application integrations from the ability to, SnapMirror and all those other little technologies that NetApp and EMC and all those guys have been developing for years. And they have a draw of experience in the things that they've done over the time. What they tend to not have is architectures that lend themselves towards what we would consider next generation, infrastructure, scalability, a lot of the things that really define where storage is going to, a.k.a. the cloud.
Well, yeah,
yeah, and, you really and DevOps, only have two
right?
choices.
Where storage is an API, it's a service right. as opposed to storage, right? And that's where it's going. And I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Gabriel.
No, but I mean, you're either going to be selling to the cloud providers, or you're going to be selling to organizations that are building their own clouds. And, you know, there's always going to be kind of a small subset of customers out there who have, you know, that 3-2-1 model, the SMB mid-tier companies who still want to keep stuff on premises. But as more and more people shift towards public, there's going to be fewer and fewer opportunities to sell them that standard dual controller box.
Yeah, I think if you look at it from Hitachi's perspective, though, they've always taken they always wanted the benchmark numbers that were the fastest, and they typically had very, very fast benchmark numbers, and they had to do this right. If their marketing and sales is set up that you're going to win a drag race, you better win a drag race, right? And without that, you know, I don't know that their salespeople actually know how to sell that stuff. So they needed to be faster. They had to do it.
Is this to keep existing customers happy and to sell into existing accounts? It doesn't strike me as something
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, they're not going to be winning a lot of new business, right, and competing against the likes of you guys and stuff like that.
There are very few net new logos coming in with this product. This is to facilitate existing customer base with a platform that's kind of, hey, you know what, we are going the same way. Yeah, we realize spinning disk isn't the best route or platform enabler. We realize our architectures don't lend themselves to certain performance dynamics, so we have to make this kind of me too. To be honest, though, I think for some of these guys, it's too late.
So it's a stopgap, basically?
Yeah, it's a Band-Aid until they can design the next generation platform that's going to compete against what the startups are able to do because of their ability to be much more nimble
or
more flexible. They buy somebody like a Tegile or a Nimble or a Solid Fire or somebody like that and incorporate that platform in.
Yeah, that's right. This is to accommodate their existing install base with their existing apps with faster product. And, you know, the problem with storage, or the good thing about being in the storage industry as always, is that the products wear out. So, you know, when it's time to do a technology refresh, which is, what, every 3.5 years or so, right? So the people that bought VSPs 3.5 years ago, they're looking at, you know, what am I going to do now? Hitachi had to do this. There's no question. Or they were going to lose those customers.
All right. I think we're all in agreement there then. Does anybody want to talk about the iPad Pro?
I don't have anything good to say about it.
has anybody used one?
No.
Probably. Of course not. You know, we're not, you know, it's not even out yet, is it?
I think it's
out today, isn't
it? We're all Luddites.
Yeah, I think it's today.
Yeah.
Wait, you didn't stand in line to get one?
They did a launch on Veterans Day. How tacky.
Maybe they
can. Oh, my gosh, Rick. You nailed it.
Seriously, that's tacky. I mean, that's tacky. They're monetizing a holiday where people are available, or at least some people. I mean,
God, that is absolutely it. How assholish.
Tacky.
Apple doesn't care about veterans.
Oh, I can see the headlines now.
Yeah.
I almost want to superimpose Kanye West. Apple doesn't care about veterans.
But like, so you know, silly. They're. It's in between Christmas and back to school, right? They're just trying to find another little angle. It's not a coincidence that it's this day. Now, for the listeners, right, in the United States, okay, it's a big market. It's not the only market. I get that. But here in the United States, today is what we call Veterans Day, which is, celebrating our armed forces, right? So a lot of people had the day off, that type of thing, especially government employees, no mail, parades, the flags, the TV, all the good Instagram pics for those with the heart in the right place, that type of thing. So personally, I think it's quite tacky to have a product launch on this day because Apple's big enough to control the product launch.
Yeah, why don't they just launch it on Christmas?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it's available to order online today. So essentially launching, but I don't know that you can buy it in stores.
I didn't see people lining up on the news, so you're probably right there, Laura. Lauren! Ah, I called you Laura. And, that's no
cool. I know. I was going to point it out, but I let it slide.
No worries, Roger.
Dr. Lauren?
No, I've met
Rich,
Lauren,
what are you doing?
nothing, Marco.
Wait, you're not Dr. Laura? You don't have a talk show?
Oh, gosh. No.
Let's not go there.
I'm going to move it on.
Especially with her.
The opposite. Her son went to my college, though.
So I've got a few items of business news here, right? Check this one out. And I don't know how much of this is just sheer speculation, but could the Dell EMC deal come down in flames over the potential taxability of the VMware tracking stock? I mean, how bad would that be if that was the case? And you know what, Mark, you're a resident expert on tracking stocks now as well, aren't you? So,
oh yes, I read all about them a couple weeks ago. I went to that Wikipedia page.
That's right. What else have we got? Business news. Docker caught double dipping in Series D funding, right? So they had a Series D round in April and another Series D round just this week, taking a further $18 million.
It's a Series double D.
Exactly.
Yeah, double D. Is this a big double D or a small double D?
Well, it's lopsided double D because they got 90 odd million earlier in the year and just 18 now. So never mind. We don't need
small
to go there.
Small D.
Yeah.
Oh, no. We need to go there.
Now, Rackspace have announced pretty decent results, actually, just this week, though they really don't seem to have impressed the market. They exceeded expectations on revenue and earnings per share, but then trading's been up and down on them. I still don't think the market are convinced on Rackspace. Now, I know that personally I'm not. And then last one, following last week's conversations, at least I think it was last week, where we talked about logistics and Amazon building that brick and mortar store in New York. Was that last week?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that was last week.
We mentioned it, yeah.
Well, apparently now Amazon are trialing restaurant delivery services in Seattle. And I ask myself the question, why? So I want to tackle this Dell EMC thing first, right? I mean, am I the only one that if this Dell EMC deal didn't go through now, would just be like absolutely gutted because I think it's quite fun watching it all go ahead. And
do they not have a good tax attorney?
Well, so all the and I've done a significant amount of reading around this today. It does seem like they've probably hired the best tax attorneys, and so will the IRS and everybody else and what have you. And the general consensus seems to be, okay, it could come unstuck if this tracking stock is deemed by the IRS to be taxable, right? But generally speaking, they think that their tax attorneys that they hired in the first place don't really think that that's going to happen. Otherwise, they wouldn't have rolled the dice on the whole thing because you're going to look pretty stupid if you've had all this hype and all this talk around, yep, Dell's buying EMC, only for it to be like, oh, yeah, what? You're going to tax the tracking stock? Yeah, we can't afford it anymore. Never mind. Day, everybody back to work. So
what you're saying is this a slow news day?
No. But yeah, probably, yeah. No, I did think it was interesting because this whole tracking stock thing of I'm kind of fascinated by it. It really seems like it's totally loaded to the benefit of Dell and not to the EMC shareholders. I mean, you
effectively, bingo.
Yeah. But that's one thing, right? But for it to be totally loaded in favor of Dell and against the IRS, well, I think that's a bit different. I mean, it's one thing to, and I, in inverted commas, right, screw the EMC shareholders over here, right? But it's a whole nother thing to try and screw over the IRS, I would have thought at least.
The IRS has a hard time staffing up to go after stuff like this. But if it becomes a big enough of a deal and it gets somebody's attention, you know, then some high level attorney or something would probably bring it up as a lawsuit, right? Or a government attorney would bring it up as a lawsuit and make it a taxable item. Or it could be where they would try to apply the tax in arrears. I think the worst scenario here is that, you know, the deal gets done and then somebody says after the fact, by the way, you got a $9 billion tax bill.
Can you imagine that arriving?
I can't imagine. I can't imagine, you know, $9 billion, you know, as a U.S. taxpayer, you know, it's like, hey, you know, pay up.
Yeah.
Wasn't it
the other thing?
Keep in mind, I mean, their goal is to maximize shareholder wealth and shareholder value. You know, getting dinged with a massive tax bill is definitely not going to be it. I tend to think this is a lot of, you know, a lot of smoke and not very much fire in terms of what it's going to do to impact this deal. And, you know, it just could be, like I said, a slow news day.
A couple of days ago, someone was suing EMC just as a shareholder because of this whole Dell acquisition, too. It's plaintiff Sue Ma. So the case is Ma v. Dell.
I think there's quite a few people suing them, actually. Yeah. You,
there's got to be a lot of that going on. Any deal this size, you're going to have that.
Yeah, but how long does it take that to work its way through the court? 3 years?
Right.
I don't know. The deal's going to take a year.
Oh, yeah, it is, yeah.
And
yeah, but it's like, I mean, just to even get a basic court date, I mean, I can't see them fast-tracking this. You know, the legal process in the U.S. is fairly slow. I mean, look at silly things like that EMC Zerto lawsuit that took, what, almost 4 years to resolve for all of 500 grand.
Yeah.
That's 500 grand. This is a big, big deal. And so it seems unlikely that, you know, the tax thing would be a showstopper or a liability to Dell. But there still is, you know, things can happen, right? And in an election year, it'll probably get buried, right? Right. In an election year, it'll probably get buried and it won't come to surface, but you never know. And
unless it becomes a campaign issue, you know.
It could become if it becomes a campaign issue in one way or another.
Well, it would become a campaign issue under
separation of the haves from the have-nots in this country, or something like that.
Mm.
Right? Or repatriation of external assets and external wealth. I mean, look at how much money Google, Facebook, and you know, Apple, and all of them are carrying. Cisco overseas. It's like,
Did you just say Cisco?
No comment.
There's like $500 billion in income sitting overseas right now, just from like five or six companies, and you know, they can't bring the money back in the U.S. because you didn't nail it 35% tax rate. It could become part of that larger government or corporate tax issue that comes up. You never know.
Right. It seems not likely, but it's not inconceivable either that Donald Trump would say, "Here's something. I'll stop this." You know, he'll say anything.
Yeah, that would be the one.
Probably listen to this podcast, guys. Come on.
Well, let's get Trump on the podcast, and we'll get Bernie on here too, and we'll see.
Get it all sorted out. That's right.
Well, I think we should have the podcast sponsored by these guys.
Yeah.
and women. Yes.
Yeah, we'll get them on the week after we've got Carly on to debate with you, Mark.
Yeah, bring it on.
Hey, so moving on to this Docker thing, right? I don't quite get my head around these different series that you get in funding, okay? So they had a Series D in April earlier this year and raised $96 million or whatever it was, right? How can they, like, 6 or 7 or whatever months later it is now, have Series D again? And there's 5 new investors in this version of Series D. I genuinely don't get that, and I don't know if anybody knows. I know we're not a... business stroke.
We're not the top half of the report on Fox News of business podcasts.
No,
we're getting at.
That's true. Yeah. So, I don't get it. Does anybody know how you can have Series D and then Series D again later in the year?
Is that like spring and fall seasons now on TV?
Well, if you look at look at their SEC file, and the total they allocated for Series D was $113 million.
Oh,
right.
So. That's, you know, basically what it looks like they did is they paced the delivery of that asset or those funds.
That is impressive. What, you've read that or did you read an article that was quoting it? Okay, fair enough.
Gabe reads that stuff.
No, yeah, and I would say you are our resident expert on that, in the same way that Mark is our resident expert on tracking stocks.
What did you do on Veterans Day today, Gabriel?
Well, all right. So I worked, and I'm a veteran too. So no, I've been working now this morning. I just had a bunch of stuff going on, and then, like I said, I'm trying to scope this lemonade stand and do a podcast. And
I'm in the
backyard now.
Wait a minute.
I'm multitasking. I'm scooping some dog poop right now while we're I'm just
Is the lemonade stand for today, Gabriel?
Oh yeah.
And it's, you were just slamming apple. For productizing on Veterans Day.
Hey, yeah, here's the thing. This is for charity. So I'm not trying to make a profit here.
Nonprofit.
This is for my daughter's thing. This is nonprofit. Actually going to Make-A-Wish Foundation. So there's a good cause. But
so if you're scooping poop, you're no longer at Michael's.
No. I'm fairly adept at the driving
of Michael's product.
So during the course of this podcast,
product placement.
Trader Joe's, Walmart, Michael's, and now my own house. See
where you're selling lemonade.
Well, yeah, my daughter and her friend are, but yeah. You got to multitask. You only have so many hours in the day. And to be honest,
I never recorded this podcast while scooping poop. I have to say that.
That is a first.
Good thing it's not a video podcast, friends.
Oh yeah, if I had one, like hangout, if you go to the tech museum in Palo Alto, they have all of the wearables that the cyborg guy from MIT wore. You can see the multiple iterations of his suit over the course of the years. I should probably get one of those to start doing the podcast from, because they don't sell Google Glass anymore.
Does it come with background noise?
One can only hope.
That just means I always have the background noise because I'll always be moving.
Yeah.
It's been a crazy week. You know, I have 3 trips to LA this week, and that means 6 hours in the car. So I got all these other things in the background I got to continue to do. To be honest, I don't think I ever stop moving.
And there's a bit of background noise to go with it. Let me get us back
on track. Sorry, listeners.
No, it's good. Let me get us back on track. Rackspace, right? $509 million in revenues and earnings per share of 26 cents. So the revenue is up. I think earnings per share, the street were expecting about 20 cents. So they came in at 26 cents. But the market still doesn't seem to be dazzled by them. So the question that I've got, right, I think is similar to what we addressed earlier with the Google Cloud Platform, right? If you are looking for a cloud platform, why would you choose Rackspace? I mean, I can maybe get my head around why somebody would choose Google Cloud Platform, but really these days, I'm struggling to wonder why anybody would choose Rackspace. Surely there's a huge risk there, more risk than Google shutting down Google Platform. There's got to be a bunch more risk that the Rackspace cloud platform would go away. And in saying this, right, is the wider question here with public clouds that if you're not massive, then you're going to be gone.
I think people choose them because they're not massive.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, they've been in the business a long time. They have a serious level of expertise. They're branching into other areas.
Yeah.
Others are not. They're adding on Azure. They're being a little more open to the other systems that are out there. So they'd be kind of coming to any cloud. There are people that are going to choose them just because of who they are, right? And their image. You go to any, I didn't see Google at OpenStack Summit. I didn't see AWS there. I didn't see Azure pimping their stuff there. But I did see Rackspace. I see Rackspace at every VMUG or VMworld. They get out there. They have a culture that people like and identify with, especially in this space. It's hoodie to hoodie.
Yeah, but Rackspace is all out.
Well, here's a bold claim. Dare I say Rackspace is the oldest, big-time cloud? Founded in 1998, that's something.
And they have got a huge old heritage with OpenStack as well, right? Their cloud is built on OpenStack, as far as I'm aware.
I mean, they created OpenStack with NASA.
It's not all public. They do private hosted. They have other streams of revenue and other offerings. They do have partnerships that they can't disclose publicly. There are other things there that they generate revenue off of. And, I know they were shopping themselves for a long time. It could have just been, hey, the price wasn't right. They have a very strong leadership team that's not their first rodeo. So, I don't count them out of the game at all. I mean, I don't see them ever being the size of Amazon or Google, or because they just – no small caliber player is going to get to that space because they didn't have the other businesses that required that kind of horsepower to begin with. Yeah. They had to build everything as a true legitimate cloud from day one, whereas – Amazon, Google, Microsoft, they all evolved existing platforms into cloud.
Yeah, and they all print money with their other businesses.
Right, yeah, they have other revenue streams that allow to offset and allow them to come in and undercut everybody. But then again, cloud can be just as personal as selling storage and anything else. It can be high touch.
Yeah, I wonder if, a more niche market goes to Rackspace. I know a few guys over there that are kind of the high up architects that are working with companies that are trying to do not just what you can do by clicking and pointing online, right? They're trying to actually architect these real world situations, and they might get more help from a company like Rackspace rather than AWS or Azure.
I think there's probably merit in that, yeah.
there are a lot of small level MSPs, managed service providers, small cloud providers, SPs in general, who still make a go of it and still are viable, profitable businesses competing against the likes of Amazon, Google, and you know, Azure.
And they do have some spinoffs, don't they? Like MongoDB and...
What, is MongoDB a spinoff from Rackspace?
I believe so.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
I could be totally wrong, but I'm...
Yeah, no worries. I'll tell you what,
Listening to this podcast is going to check up on that, Lauren.
And somebody's going to be asking us about that dying bird in the background there as well. Where is that?
It's the entire...
it's not me.
Is it not?
It's me.
Is it?
I've got two of these.
Mark is snoring or sneezing.
I've got two of these little Japanese wind-up critters or something, but they're battery-powered, and I can't turn them off. I've been trying the whole show to get these guys to shut up.
No, leave them going. I like it. Hey, I can say something about Rackspace as well, right? So my last job where I was an employee, I ran a couple of Linux teams, and we were hiring into our advanced Linux team, and we approached a lot of people that were working in and around London. And we must have approached, I don't know, at least 10 guys that worked at Rackspace, and we couldn't get any of them to budge. They were all super, super happy working for Rackspace, you know, as like guys in their like advanced Linux support team. None of them would budge. So it does seem like people like working there as well. There's probably a good company culture and stuff, and they're probably, you know, for a techie, I imagine they're probably quite a cool company to work for. You know, they're heavy on Linux, they're heavy on OpenStack. It's all exciting technologies as well. So, yeah, okay, maybe I was a bit harsh on them.
They're fairly adept at retaining talent. I mean, we all know Cody Bunch over there, and I know Cody looked at, you know, I think that people have looked at moving else onward, and they've made attractive offers to keep people on board that are valuable to them. And that's another thing. They have a lot of people that have been Rackers for 8, 10,
Rackers,
12 years.
Yeah.
Rackers, yeah.
Racker. I
went through... the interview process with them for a position a while back, and you know, it was their hiring process, their HR staff, the people who go out and recruit, very adept, very, very good at their jobs, and know how to push the right kind of buttons that will attract somebody to come work there.
So did they lose interest in you, Gabriel, when you told them you couldn't even write a Hello World script?
That's probably pretty much it.
Object Rocket is what I was thinking of. That's a spinoff company.
Oh, not MongoDB. Mm-hmm. Object.
I think
Rocket.
They use MongoDB, but it's Object Rocket. Yeah.
All right. Okay. One last story then. So this thing about Amazon, yeah, I'm like scratching my head over the whole thing that Amazon seems to be. Well, I know it's not like a big thing for them at the moment, but there's quite a lot of things going on at Amazon these days that seem to be. Can I put it more brick and mortar type solutions? They're getting into, I don't even know how to phrase it, not real world businesses, because of course Amazon Web Services and stuff is real world, but less of the digital stuff and more of the, we're going to deliver your stuff. We're into logistics.
Uber.
Yeah. I'm just like, why are they doing this?
Because there's money in it.
I know, but is it not going to turn? It strikes me a little bit, right, as a little bit like Cisco with the flip or HP with the tablets or whatever. You know, you think, okay, we need to keep growing our profits and we want double-digit growth, but we've kind of saturated the markets that we're already in maybe. Oh, look, here's some other markets that we can come and steamroll it. And I don't know. Does that work very often?
I'm wondering if they're trying to find a way to utilize their drivers right now. I mean, how many people are really ordering Amazon Prime now to get, you know, whatever in an hour? Do they need to give their drivers other things so they're getting into this, you know, food delivery, restaurant delivery? I don't know. I've just always wondered, yeah, how much time could the drivers be spending actually working? I don't know.
And I mean, these kind of businesses, right, what's the kind of margins in them? I can't imagine they're very high margin compared to something like AWS.
No, and I don't think they are. But here's the thing. I think what they do is that they go into these markets, these new markets, and they find ways to hook you on it. I mean, I'm totally hooked on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yeah.
Could not live without it. I mean, I saw some people talking about Instacart the other day. It's like, I haven't left the house in a month to shop.
Right. And yeah. if that's happening to one person, it's
dude,
to 10.
You were at Michael's today.
Walmart.
I'm not saying me, but I'm saying that there are people out there like, you know what, everything is going to come to me via a drone or a dog sled or whatever delivery vehicle that they want to leverage. And keep in mind, they continue to get more and more information about their customer base and the habits of people that allow them to tweak these platforms. I mean, at some point it's going to be, I mean, if you've ever seen the movie Idiocracy, and you go and there's a scene in there where they go to Costco and Costco's like, they sell everything. They can control the earth for the most part. And it's like pretty soon, you know, you'll be able to get pretty much anything you want from Amazon at any time you want. Right. And we're all going to be sitting on chairs that have toilets built in.
Who says we're not already?
They are.
That was me in Japan.
Oh.
Those warm seats, man. I miss those things.
Yeah. Could we actually end up in an Amazon world, you know, where they literally, I mean, it doesn't even have to be Amazon, but you know how companies seem to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Could we end up in a situation where
Globocorp.
Yeah, there you go.
Skynet. OPP. Yeah.
Could we? And it could be like the whole of the world is like controlled by this company, except like North Korea or something, you know. And it's like they're worse than us, or are we worse than them? Where am I going with that? Who cares?
There'll be three companies. There'll be Amazon, Google, and Facebook.
All three will merge, and they will become the world government.
Yeah.
They are the Illuminati.
Battle Royale.
Evil Corp. I'm a
robot. They're
going to
build mech robots. They'll build mech robots, and they will fight in an arena. And we will get to finally watch legitimate Shogun Warriors.
We'll call it GooBookon.
Oh, yeah.
Google. Brought to you by Microsoft Azure Cloud.
So I'm hearing our outro music on that. That sounds cool to me.
Yeah. I heard it 20 minutes ago.